Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. There's a massive transformation underway in American healthcare, and I'm not just talking about Obamacare. I'm referring to the computerization of nearly all aspects of healthcare, from record keeping, getting rid of those dusty charts, to data collection, analysis, and even ticklers that remind us all of recommended tests and treatments. Through the 2009 Stimulus Act, the federal government set aside more than $30 billion to induce doctors and their practices to adopt computerized record-keeping systems, provided that we use them in a fashion known as meaningful use. The investment has nurtured a number of different industries, from programmers and technicians to consultants, as well as those that implement and troubleshoot the computerized systems that your doctor is now likely using. If done properly, every individual doctor in the country that participates in the Medicare program, for example, would be entitled to $44,000 as an incentive to make the transition away from paper. And it appears that it's working. Larger practices of 10 physicians or more have doubled the use of electronic health records in less than 4 years, according to some estimates. More than two-thirds of practices that size are now using electronic health records. My guest today, Ron Sterling, is an expert on meaningful use. He advises doctors and health enterprises on selecting and implementing electronic health records. He'll be speaking in Tulsa on Tuesday, August 27th at TCC's Northeast Campus on behalf of the Community Service Council of Tulsa. Ron Sterling, welcome to Studio Tulsa on Health. I want to start by asking you basically to define the term meaningful use.
Well, meaningful use was a structure that was established by the federal government as part of the American Reinvestment and Recovery Act, and they basically set aside $17 billion in Medicaid incentives and $17 billion in Medicare incentives to encourage providers to put in electronic health records. And in order to collect money, they decided that they would create a structure whereby providers would use electronic health records in a meaningful way. We didn't know what that meant back in 2009, but a year and a half or so later, after a couple of iterations, they came up with the standard of what it means to use electronic health record in a meaningful way. And basically, there's three significant pieces to it. One is that I have to do some electronic prescriptions and put that into my electronic health record. And the second thing I have to do is I have to do a bunch of different things to create a clinical summary, which is a piece of paper that I give to a patient so they understand what the care that was provided to them and what they need to do to keep themselves well or make themselves better. And then there's a couple of other different things I do to take advantage and use the information that's on the clinical summary. So that's really what meaningful use means.
And who came up with the term? You said it was the government. I mean, all of this really is 4 years old.
Absolutely. We back in 2008, if you said meaningful use to somebody, nobody had no idea what that meant. This all evolved out of the 2009 legislation. And they decided that they wanted eligible providers. We didn't know what an eligible provider was back then either. They wanted eligible providers to use electronic health records in a meaningful way. And then they took about a year and a half to figure out what that meant. And the meaningful use criteria, if you really want to know the details, there's about 15 things that we have to do. And then we have to pick five additional things from a menu of 10 items that we have to do. And this is by eligible provider. So each individual eligible provider, whether they're a physician under the Medicare program or under the Medicaid program, it covers physicians and some mid-level providers, they have to go and do these specific things in order to qualify for meaningful use. Meaningful use allows them to collect an incentive from the government to use an electronic health record.
Okay, so that was my next question. So this all sounds great. You know, doctors and nurse practitioners and physician assistants, they're now entering data onto computers. I have actually gone to my doctor, and he spent a lot of time sort of typing things in as I talked to him. And my question was, you know, so what's in this for me? I'm the patient.
Well, I think the thing that's in it for you as a patient is really the following. Right now, if I go to a doctor, when I went to a doctor in the paper world and the doctor said, well, you have this problem, it's not a real problem yet, but why don't you come back and see me in 6 months, or why don't you come back and see me in a year, or let's get this lab test in a couple months after the infection's gone, or something along those lines. The doctor would write it down on the paper chart, and then they would put the chart up on the shelf. And very frequently, we would have patients not be able to remember what was I supposed to get, or they forgot about the 3 months, or they never had something happen. And in some cases, we had people end up with serious problems because they weren't taking care of themselves. And the real issue is that that information about what the doctor's plan was for care was literally inaccessible. So the doctor didn't know that the patient didn't show up, or the doctor didn't know that the patient didn't get their lab test. So what's in it for you as a patient is a couple of things. Number one, doctors will put this information in their computer system, so now immediate access to it, and they have immediate access to you as a patient. So if you call in with a question, perhaps it's a refill for a prescription, I can immediately bring up your medical record and speak to you and say, wait a second, last time you were here, you were supposed to get an MRI and come back and see the doctor, and you didn't do that. So I can look at it that way. And I can also be proactive. I can go into some electronic health record system. I can actually go in and I can say, I want to see the care recommendations that the doctor made to patients that haven't been fulfilled yet. So I can call you and I can say, John, you were supposed to come back and get an MRI. You were supposed to come back and see the doctor, and that hasn't happened yet. What can I do to facilitate that happening? In addition, another part of meaningful use has a couple of different stages, creatively called stage one, stage two, and stage three. And under stage two of meaningful use, doctors are actually going to be engaging with patients electronically, typically through a patient portal. So you as a patient would be able to go into the patient portal, bring up the patient portal, and some systems would actually come back to you and say, John, you were supposed to get that MRI and come back and see the doctor. How can we make that happen? So to remind patients about the care recommendations of the doctor that was either supposed to make the patient well or make them better, keep them well or make them better, as well as communicate that information in as many opportunities as we can to reinforce the patient recommendations so that they'll do what they need to do to follow the doctor's advice. So that's really the benefit for you as a patient.
All right, so that, I mean, it functions largely as a tickler. I mean, it reminds the doctor or the office.
System.
Yeah. And I mean, there's no doubt that's good, obviously, because as you point out, the paper chart sitting on the shelf, you know, behind the check-in desk doesn't do a lot of good, not to mention the fact that the handwriting might be somewhat illegible. And I wanted to ask, too,
I could go into the paper chart, open it up to find out if you need a refill for a prescription, but then I would have to go thrash through the paper to find those unfilled MRI studies or doctor visits. In the EHR world, some EHRs, when the doctor puts in that order is now going to be presented to me in many different ways. So I don't just have to go to the chart note to see the order. I might see the order on a face sheet. In other words, a summary sheet that's automatically generated by the patient. And that's really one of the big benefits of electronic health records. If you go back and think about a prescription for a second, a doctor would write the prescription on the prescription pad. They're going to write it on their scribble note in their chart. They might have something called a face sheet where they're going to write the prescription on there so they can look and see the key information about the patient. They might dictate it, and then somebody might transcribe it. So we've taken that same prescription, and we've actually recorded it five different times. In an EHR environment, when I put the prescription into the system can now present it to me many different ways, even though I only entered it into the system once. And that goes for an order for an MRI. It goes for a follow-up visit for patient care. It goes for the prescription. Also, the system can automatically issue health maintenance reminders, regardless of whether the doctor put the information in or not. For example, if a patient's a diabetic, you can actually program the system to say, if a patient's a diabetic, remind them to get their A1C test. If the patient's over the age of 50, remind them to get a colonoscopy every 10 years. And we can actually check and see if that's happened inside the record and automatically present those care recommendations to the patient. So it's really powerful for keeping track of the care recommendations for the patient's specific situation, as well as the recommendations that the doctor may come up with in the context of serving the patient.
You mentioned that meaningful use really comes to us from the Reinvestment and Recovery Act, also known as the stimulus package. So what's interesting to note is that this predates the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. So this was going to happen really regardless of whether or not we had health care reform.
Right. It's actually paid for out of a completely different bucket. The money comes from a different place than the money for Obamacare.
And $17 billion, and you alluded to this, that there are incentive payments to providers for adopting electronic health records, EHRs. So how does a physician or an office or a group go about collecting these incentives? I mean, so where you check off a box or you call Medicare and you say, hey, I got a computer, and how much money are we talking about here?
That's a great question. There's two programs. There's a Medicare program. They got $17 billion. There's a Medicaid program. They got $17 billion. The programs are very different. The Medicare program pays the doctor up to $44,000 over a five-year period. The Medicaid program can pay over $60,000, and that's paid out over a six-year period. And there's a whole bunch of little details into how you get the money and things like that. But the deal is, in the Medicare program, I basically have to go in, I have to buy an electronic health record, I have to meet these standards for what they defined as meaningful use. In summary, do electronic prescriptions, I have to provide patients with a clinical summary, and then I have to use the information on the clinical summary for various purposes, and then I've attained meaningful use, I get my money. In the Medicaid program, if I go work towards putting an electronic health record, I can get my first payment. My second payment is contingent on me needing meaningful use, which is the same thing we talked about in the Medicare program, which is I have to do the electronic prescription thing, I have to give patients clinical summaries, and then I use the clinical summary information for other purposes. Now, I do that independently of the government. I go and I work towards meeting this meaningful use, and then when I have attained it, I have to attain it for 90 days. And now, once I've completed my 90 days, now I go into the computer, contact the government website. I can register. The doctor would register for it, and then they go in and say, I did what I was supposed to do. Now you can send me my incentive money. Remember, this is not by practice. It's not by healthcare organization. It's by individual eligible provider. So you could walk into a practice, and you could see some doctors in that same practice that collected their money last year. You could see some doctors in the practice that are collecting the money this year. You can see have other doctors in the practice that are never going to collect money. So it's all by eligible provider.
So there's something a little bit shocking about this, which is that you mentioned the incentives at the individual level, but you, if I do the addition correctly, you're talking about $100,000, over $100,000 per provider if you meet the criteria. And is this a case of the rich getting richer? I mean, so doctors are getting paid, essentially. Okay, they have to, I guess, go out and make an investment, obviously. So maybe it's somewhat of a reimbursement, if you will. But is there any historical analog for this where a whole industry has been incentivized to, you know, adopt electronic anything, computers, what have you? I mean, other industries didn't have this problem. I mean, in a self-interested fashion, they went out and used computers for record keeping or billing or sales or what have you, inventory control. Why is medicine so different?
Well, first off, just a little clarification. You can participate in the Medicare or the Medicaid program. You can't participate in both.
Oh, you can't do both.
So,
okay.
Right. So the best you could do is get $60,000 by participating in the Medicaid program. If you participate in the Medicare program, you can't participate in the Medicaid program and vice versa. That's one thing. Second thing, as far as making the rich get richer or anything along those lines, the U.S. government, if you go back to 2008, 2009, the real key here was that, and remember, this was $34 billion out of more than $800 billion that was included in the stimulus money. So this is one of the ideas, one of the programs whose goal it was to put Americans back to work. And certainly there's a public policy issue associated with this, because certainly the government, as the biggest payer for healthcare services anywhere in the world, the U.S. government through Medicare and Medicaid pays more than anybody else. They had an interest in trying to get mechanisms and strategies to save money. And the idea was, wait a second, we have all kinds of other industries, lawyers and retail and distribution companies and manufacturers. Everybody else has derived benefit from putting in electronic systems to manage their business and promote exchanges of information with their business trading partners and all kinds of things like that. But we don't really have that in healthcare because nobody will go and put in systems. So they wanted to, since they're the biggest payer, they have the most to gain, they thought that, gee, well, if we go out and we create this incentive, maybe that's going to help people put in electronic health records and we will create systemic savings. And the systemic savings are not necessarily all money that's going to go to the person that invested in it. So maybe I go into my in a practice and now they're going to put an electronic health record, and because of that, they are now mitigating the chance that a patient's going to end up in an ER room or the chance a patient's going to end up in a hospital, because they're providing more accurate and more outreach to the patient so they take care of themselves. So now we've saved money systemically, but we don't pay the doctor for that. We pay the doctor for bringing the patient into their office. So that whole payment system is really going to dramatically change. Now, the other question you asked was, what about a comparable situation? Is there any other comparable situation? We have other comparable situations, but they didn't get any money. So one of the best examples, I think, is accounting. Accounting firms, a couple of years ago, had to start submitting electronic tax returns to the federal government. But the accounting firms weren't given any money by the government to do this. So there was no incentive, there was no subsidy, or anything along those lines. The accounting firms were just told, you know, you're going to have to submit electronic tax returns. And so that's an example that there really hasn't been a comparable situation where there were these kinds of incentives. Certainly not globally on a national basis. We certainly have examples of targeted incentives in various other areas. We have other incentives in healthcare to try to use technology. But I think I personally don't know, I'm not saying there aren't any, I personally don't know of other industries that got a similar incentive from the government.
But that accounting example you give, I mean, that would fall under what we would probably refer to as an unfunded mandate. So, I mean, there was some penalty, was there not, for accounting firms not submitting those tax forms electronically?
Yeah, there was. Just like a couple of years ago, the healthcare industry, we had to submit claims electronically to Medicare. If you had a certain number of claims per month, you had to submit them electronically to Medicare and get off of paper. Medicare didn't provide any funding to doctors so they would submit electronic claims. So to your point, there really is not a similar situation where people got an incentive money to go do something which arguably might be good from a business perspective, but for a lot of different reasons, people weren't doing it. Now, is it a good idea from a business perspective, and why weren't people doing it? Well, the reality is we had to wait for somebody to blink. In other words, if you're going to say to somebody, everybody go out and put in all these systems to have electronic prescriptions, well, then they're going to say, well, so what? The doctor's doing the data entry for the pharmacy. The pharmacy's going to get all these benefits because they're not going to have to pay their staff to try to read the prescription anymore. So it's a very, healthcare is a very symbiotic situation. We have lots and lots of people depending on other people to do things. And now we're trying to create kind of a push so that we'll have systemic savings from the use of technology. Now, remember, this is quite a difficult transition. I might have 15 years of information sitting on a patient's paper record, and I go into the electronic health record and there's nothing there. And furthermore, for 15 years, I didn't plan to put that paper record in electronic form. So even if I were to scan all that information in, it's not going to be beautiful. It may be difficult to work with. And furthermore, when I'm dealing with scanned images rather than the paper chart, when you look at a doctor's paper chart, sometimes you'll see different colored pieces of paper. Or even if the doctor's flipping through the chart, they can see there's a visual field test, or here's a lab result, or here's a PAP exam, or here's an op report from a procedure that was done. So literally by flipping through the chart, the doctor gets a pretty good feel for what this patient's situation is. That's a lot harder to do in an electronic environment from a paper scanned image. Now, is it a lot easier if I'm in the chart, in the electronic chart, to navigate around and look at various information? I can look at information by type, so I can look at all of the visual field tests, or I can look at all the info, all the labs, or I can see a flow sheet with all the labs or flow sheet with other information. I can go in and I can say, I want to see all the encounters where the patient came in complaining of headaches, all this other kind of stuff, which is really helpful, but you got to get the information in there. And that first couple of appointments are much in there. And if a patient has a chronic problem or a birth defect, it may be difficult to go back and look at those historic records. So it's quite a challenge to make this work.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. My guest today, Ron Sterling, is an expert in the concept of meaningful use, and he'll be appearing in Tulsa on August 27th through a talk at the Community Service Council and part of the My Health Access Network. And we're talking about implementation of computerized records for doctors' offices and healthcare enterprises. And I'm wondering, do we know yet, it's 3 to 4 years in, what the sense of return on investment is at this point? It's probably far too early to calculate those systemic savings you were mentioning.
I think it is far too early to calculate the systemic savings. But you're talking about a network of issues. I mean, there's all kinds of things going on. We have patient-centered medical home, accountable care organizations, Right now, we're in a predominantly a fee-for-service payment structure. That's going to evolve also over the next couple of years. We have all kinds of changes and transitions going on in healthcare. So I think it's going to be really difficult to assign blame or credit to one particular thing. The one thing I will tell you is that if we take a look at all the strategies associated with saving money and basically trying to provide more effective care to patients, keep better track of patient situations, certainly I think EHR is going to be very, very helpful when we're interacting with patients over the internet. EHRs are very, very helpful when healthcare providers are interacting with each other. So if a primary care physician needs to send a patient to a gastroenterologist, that whole transition right now is done completely with paper. It's done completely manually. I mean, it's almost sad because they literally call up the other party. When you call up your doctor, when you call up your doctor for help about a problem, you're better off calling your auto service station about the health of your car. You call the auto service station about your car and ask them about the last time you had your oil change, or when did you need your next oil change, or what was the recommendation that they had the last time you were there, and they will tell you while you're on the phone what happened and what you need to do. How many medical practices, when we call and say, hi, I'm a patient, I had a problem, I can't remember what it was, and I was supposed to do something, many practices are going to have to get back to us. So that's kind of ironic that for a $30, $40 oil change or a couple hundred dollars in work on our car, somebody's tracking the details of that. But when it comes to a critical healthcare problem that we may not fully understand, that information is not as available to us.
I like the way you framed the Stimulus Act and the meaningful use movement, if you will, as a real spur to pretty much an entire industry. And I know from reading about this that there are many players in this field. I guess specifically I wanted to ask you about, I guess, these EHR companies. So there are companies that provide sort of off-the-shelf solutions where you can literally buy some software package that may, I hope is meaningfully use compliant. But then there are sort of web-based or cloud-based solutions. And I just wondered if you could comment, and maybe you represent some of them or work with some of them, so I don't really want a commercial, but I'm just wondering who are the biggest players out there and what are the various advantages and disadvantages? And I guess with a robust marketplace, obviously there's competition, and so people are going to compete on service and price. But I also worry, one of the things I see when I'm in practice is that the EMR that I use in my outpatient clinic is different than the EMR that's used at one of the hospitals I practice at, and they don't communicate. And I think one of the promises about meaningful use is that there will be some better coordination and communication between these different EHR systems. Is that coming down the pike?
It's definitely coming down the pike. It's definitely included in the general strategy. You asked a couple questions. I'd be more than glad to go through them. Off-the-shelf versus cloud-based systems. It's really a strategy about whether you want to have a system in your office or whether you want to use something out on the cloud. Many products are available in either environment. You can actually, even if it's not, you can actually buy cloud services and install your software on there and just use the cloud services. So the real difference there is basically looking at the cost associated with it. And also there's something called HIPAA security. HIPAA security has a bunch of rules about what a practice has to do to protect the integrity, the accessibility, and the confidentiality of patient information, protected health information. And so if a smaller practice, it's really difficult for a smaller practice to put in all the redundancies and have all the security and the management and make sure everything's properly locked up and all these other kinds of deals. So a cloud environment is very attractive to them because they don't have to worry about where the server is and make sure it's locked up and all these other kinds of situations. A bigger practice may want to have the system in-house, but we can have a practice using the in-house system with the same software as a completely different practice using the cloud. As far as service and price is concerned, it's almost like cars. If you go in to buy a Cadillac, if they're still being sold, I'm just kidding, but if you go in to buy a Cadillac, Cadillac is at a certain price point, Chevrolet is at another price point. You're not going to compare a Mercedes car with a Chevette. It's a different price point, different features, different capabilities. So basically, we have different levels or different target markets for various different products. The big difference or the big issue has to do with something I call clinical content. Clinical content is the area of medicine-specific features and capabilities of an electronic health record. For example, a pediatric practice has very different needs than an orthopedic practice. Pediatric practices don't do anything about surgery scheduling. They are trying to refer patients to other practices and specialists and things like that, but they don't do surgery scheduling. Orthopedic practices trying to coordinate physical therapy and radiology studies and all kinds of other things. So that's, you know, that depends on what they want about what kind of class of product that you're looking for. So when somebody who's looking for a primary care-oriented practice, there are EHRs out there that are targeted to ophthalmology or cardiology. They don't really deal with primary care practices. If I'm an orthopedic practice, there are products out there that are geared towards orthopedics, but I wouldn't want to look at a primary care practice focused EHR that does all kinds of cool things with immunization, but doesn't do a lot of cool things with therapy, physical therapy. As far as this discussion about EHR in the office versus in the hospital, remember, hospital systems are focused towards episode of care. So a patient comes in, they got a problem, they deal with the problem, stabilize them, make them better, and send them back out to for follow-up. Physicians generally are concerned with continuity of care. It's a very different animal. When the hospital releases the patient and they get their discharge instructions, the hospital is done with you. And that's when they turn you over to your physician, whether it's a surgeon or a primary care physician or something like that, the primary physician is concerned about picking up the ball and getting you to where you need to be with your health. So it's a very different process, very different focus, very different types of information needs, and very different types of organizations. So in general, the EHR that you use in a hospital really isn't set up to do continuity of care issues that are more appropriate in the practice environment. And that's really, you know, that's really why you see that difference.
Okay, I want to shift gears for a second and just ask how you got into this line of work.
Oh, I hung around the wrong people.
So I'm guessing you probably like computers or something to do with computers or the idea.
Well, I started out as a computer geek, did a lot of business applications, migrated in from there into practice management systems in healthcare, and started working with electronic health record systems through that connection.
And so has the Stimulus Act of 2009 been a boon to your career? I imagine it is if you're going around speaking about it, but you were working in this field well before that, I assume.
Yeah, I predate the stimulus money. So in the computer world, I guess that makes you ancient because, that's iPhone territory, right?
Well, Ron Sterling, we're looking forward to your appearance here in Tulsa, and I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you very much, John. Look forward to coming to Tulsa.
Ron Sterling is an expert on meaningful use. He'll be appearing in Tulsa on August 27th at Tulsa Community College's Northeast Campus for a noontime seminar that is free and open to the public, sponsored by the Community Service Council of Tulsa and the My Health Access Network. For more information, call Laura Ross White at 918-931-9813. Well, that's Studio Tulsa on Health for today. Our show is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. If you missed one of our recent shows, you can look at our archive under the Studio Tulsa tab on our website at publicradiotulsa.org. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.